it's a real pleasure to be here today. I want to say thank you to Francisco and to Julia for the opportunity to be here today. And I look forward to your questions and our conversation, because I believe that when you're talking about data, it is easy for data to be really intense, just a lot of information, and you just kind of like your eyes glaze over. I hope that today with my presentation that I not only show you a bunch of tables and figures and charts, but that I help to get you excited about some of the tables, figures, and charts that we produce from the Pew Research Center. The Pew Research Center is known, I think, for one thing particularly, and that is to be able to take data that can sometimes be opaque, but make it transparent and make it easy to understand. Our job is really to be able to explain trends and data, trends and facts and so forth, in a way that's accessible to the general public and also usable by the general public. So I hope that this is not just about learning a few things about what we produce, but also hopefully this provides a guide for some of the resources we have that may be helpful to you as you're doing your own work to either apply for grants or to produce a report or so forth. About my baptisms. Yes, I was baptized twice. My parents, they couldn't decide. My dad promised that my two sets of ninos could baptize me. And of course, they don't live next to each other. One lives north of LA, the other ones live south of LA. But every time when I was growing up, my mom would say, "Mijo, we're going to have both ninos here today, so just be sure you don't say something about one or the other," because they would always be at the same party. But my mom never wanted me to, you know, make sure that I revealed this. So all throughout my life, I've had to address this. Just recently, the reason why I bring this up is because my mom found my two birth certificates. So that's how come I actually have the evidence to show you the two sets of ninos from that same summer. So, all right, let's get started. First, let me tell you a little bit about the Pew Research Center. Make sure this works. There we go. The Pew Research Center is based in Washington, D.C. We are a group that studies the nation overall, but we also do a lot of international work as well. The Hispanic Project particularly focuses on U.S. Latinos, and we're looking at all the trends in the community. We're looking at the ways in which the community is changing the United States, and also how the United States is changing the Latino community. Now, we call ourselves a fact tank as opposed to a think tank. What I mean by that is that we have no positions on policy. We make no recommendations. We're not an advocacy organization. We are funded by the Pew Charitable Trust simply to provide information. So if you look at any reports, you'll find that our reports will not have recommendations at the end. There won't be any, "and here's what the president should do." There won't be any, "and here's what the Congress should do." That's what a think tank that's what a think tank does. But we just simply provide information. So we will touch on policy questions. We ask Americans about things like, do they support same-sex marriage, for example? But we will not make any recommendations about what should be done. So keep that in mind as you look at some of our work, because if somebody asks me a question like, "So, what should we do?" I'll say, "I don't know." So, okay. Now, I know that Professor Pastor covered a lot of this ground, so I apologize if there's a little bit of repeat here, and I will try to go quickly. As you know, the nation's Latino population makes up 17% of the U.S. population overall. It's growing fast. And also, it's a relatively young population. You can see that among Americans ages 25 and older, Latinos only make up about 13% of that population. But when we talk about young people, people of college-going age, Latinos make up about 20% of that population. And when you take a look at younger groups, you'll see that when you look at people ages 0 to 5, Latinos make up a whopping one quarter of that population nationwide. One quarter of all newborns in the United States in recent years are Latino. I'm not just talking about Los Angeles. I'm not just talking about Miami. I'm talking about nationwide. And I think that's important to note. Now, the Census Bureau has published some new statistics on projections moving forward. And these are the new projections from the Census Bureau. The nation's Latino population is growing fast. And by 2060, it's projected to be about 29% of the U.S. population overall. Now, that's interesting, but a couple of things. These population projections have actually been reduced. Because of a slowdown in immigration to the United States, the Hispanic population is not projected to grow quite as fast. So this achieving 29% of the U.S. population by 2060, actually that's what they were saying a few years ago about 2050. So things have kind of been pushed back 10 years. I think that's important to note because there are many demographic changes afoot within the Latino community. Now, in terms of Latino demographics, as you know, the Hispanic population has hit 54 million. We're probably up to 55, 56 million now. But one of the interesting things about the growth in this population is where that growth is coming from. In the 80s and 90s, there was a lot of immigration from Latin America, particularly Mexico, to the United States. But some things changed in the 2000s. Partly it's the recession, but this change was already underway before the recession hit. As a result, migration slowed down. And immigrants, while still contributing to growth of the Hispanic population, in the 2000s, it was actually birth in the United States to Hispanic mothers that mattered more for population growth than the arrival of new immigrants. This gap, you can see it here for the 2000s, 9.6 million versus 6.5 million. That gap is only going to get larger in the coming decades. The Latino population's growth from this point on, even if immigration returns to the levels we saw in the 2000s and 1990s, it's still going to be U.S. births that matter more for Hispanic population growth moving forward. That means that the foreign-born share of the Hispanic population is now in decline. Today, about 36% of all Hispanics are foreign-born. That number, though, among adults is now below half. So below half, less than half, or about half, I should say, of Hispanic adults today are foreign-born. The Census Bureau projects that these shares are going to continue to fall. The Hispanic share, foreign-born, is actually going to decline below 30% by 2060. So the foreign-born share of the U.S. Hispanic population is in decline. Nonetheless, Latinos have played a significant role in shaping the demographics of this country, and they've done so by being the biggest part of the most recent immigration wave to the United States. Between 1965 and today, more than 40 million people have arrived in the United States as immigrants. Half of them are from Latin America. So Latin America has been the biggest driver of immigrant growth in the United States recently. A little side note, by the way, if you ever go with me to a cocktail party, I'm going to have lots of facts. My friends ask me how come I have so many facts in my head. What is it pushing out that I'm not remembering? I don't know. But nonetheless, more facts for you. We're near the historic high or the share of the U.S. population that is foreign-born. At the moment, it's about 13.9%. The peak was in the late 19th, early 20th century at 15%. We're almost there, and Hispanics have played a big role in shaping that. But there's also a big change here, too. Kind of hinted at this already. The share of the nation's immigrants who are coming from Latin America today has actually dropped so much that now there are more immigrants arriving from Asia, and this has been true since 2009, more immigrants arriving from Asia per year than arriving from Latin America. That's really a big change because for decades it was Latin America that was the big driver. Now it looks like Asia has surpassed Latin America as the main source of immigrants for the United States. Now, Dr. Pastor showed you a bunch of pyramid profiles. I'm going to show you a few as well, so please bear with me. I think some new ground here that I think you'll find very interesting. As he noted, the Hispanic population is younger than the white non-Hispanic population. You can see for the white non-Hispanic population how it looks like a snake with something in the middle, right? That's because that's the baby boomer population. The median age is 42. What about for the Hispanic population? Median age is 27. It looks more like a pyramid because it's a really young population. But there is something that's embedded in all of these that I think is really quite fascinating. When you take a look at the age pyramid profile for U.S.-born Hispanics, whose median age is 14, you'll see how young the U.S.-born Hispanic population is. Again, emphasizing the importance of U.S.-born Latinos for Hispanic population growth and also their impact on a number of trends, including religious affiliation, which I'm going to talk about in just a second. One other thing to note about Latinos, they're very diverse, and diversity can mean many things. Diversity for the Latino community, of course, includes where people trace their roots. It also includes language. It includes whether or not you're an immigrant or you're U.S. born. So lots of types of different diversity. But as you can see, there are 34 million Hispanics who trace their roots to Mexico. 34 million Mexican origin Hispanics, by far the largest group. However, there are some changes happening within the community. Puerto Ricans make up about 10% of the population. Cubans, Salvadorans make up about 3.5-4%. Notice there's 2 million each. This is a really interesting set of circumstances because the Census Bureau says that these two are essentially the same size. So I presented this slide at a leadership conference for Salvadoran leaders. And when I presented this slide at that conference, they started chanting, "We're number three, we're number three." Because they wanted me to change the slide and put Salvadoran. I mean, it's the same, right? So why aren't they number three? But it speaks to the big changes that are happening within the community. The big three Hispanic origin groups may no longer be Mexican, Puerto Rican, Cuban. It may soon be Mexican, Puerto Rican, Cuban, Salvadoran, and Dominican. So it'll be five as opposed to, and I'd add Guatemalans and Colombians into that too. It's a much more diverse group than it has ever been. Where do Latinos live? These are the five largest Hispanic states by population. You can see California and Texas together have about half of the nation's Hispanic population. Of course, here's another factoid for you. The state of Florida has 4.4 million Hispanics overall. Did you know Los Angeles County has over 5 million? So there are more Latinos who live in Los Angeles County than live in the entire state of Florida. So just FYI. You got New York and you got Illinois, all of which are among the big states in terms of Hispanic population. Now, where is some of the fastest growth happening? It's happening in the Southeast. It's happening in places like Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky. Those states, over the last few years, have had some of the fastest Hispanic population growth. I should throw Georgia in there, too. It's not in here because it's not one of the top five in terms of growth. But Georgia's really fascinating because between 2000 and 2010, the Hispanic population there nearly doubled. Now, Georgia has nearly 1 million Hispanics. And you know what state it's about to overtake? New Mexico, which is one of the old Hispanic states. So soon, Georgia might be number 9 and New Mexico will be number 10. That's a big change if you think about it, because Georgia, 20 years ago, had very, very few Latinos. A lot of that has been driven by Mexican migration. What about in different cities? You probably know this. Miami is dominated by Cubans. Washington, D.C. by Salvadorans. The New York area, Puerto Rican and Dominican. Los Angeles, Mexican. And Atlanta, to show you that Georgia effect, Mexican. So, moving on. Let me talk to you a little bit about religious affiliation and Latinos after a little bit of that demographic portrait. At the Pew Research Center, we've been tracking the religious affiliation of Latinos for a while now. And one of the things that we've been tracking is the share who identify as Catholic. Now keep in mind, these are results for the United States. These are results among Hispanic adults in the United States. So this is just among adults. And you can see that the share Catholic among Hispanics has been falling quite quickly. It was at 67% in 2010. It is now at 55% in 2013. Some of our more recent estimates actually put it maybe even falling below 50% in some new 2015 data that we haven't published yet. But it's continuing a downward slide. Now, many folks have found a similar result. There is some debate about the size of the decline or the exact point estimates. But there's no doubt that the share Catholic among Hispanic adults has been in decline. Now, what are the religious affiliations of Latinos? And I'm sorry this doesn't look so sharp, but I think you could get the idea here. 55% of Hispanic adults say that they are Catholic. Another 22% identify as Protestant, with 16% of all Hispanic adults saying they're evangelical. 18% identify as unaffiliated, and then there's a few others there at the top. So you can see that 18% of the Hispanic population identifies or says a religious affiliation is an unaffiliated one, or there are none. You could also see how this varies across different immigrant groups. So for example, among foreign-born Hispanics, 60% are Catholic. Among U.S.-born, 48%. And then if you look at it by immigrant generation, take a look at that last column, 45% of Latinos who were born in the United States and have U.S.-born parents, so they're third generation, 45% of them identify as Catholic. Now that's actually a big difference compared to the foreign-born, right, the immigrants, who are at 60%. Now what about some of the others? You can see that, for example, on Protestant, 20% of foreign-borns identify as Protestant with 4% as mainline. Among the U.S.-born, 8% is mainline, 24% is Protestant. And then you can see for the generations, the patterns, the numbers look fairly similar with an increase to the third generation. Perhaps most interestingly is the unaffiliated line here. 15% of foreign-born say that they are unaffiliated with any religious denomination. But you can see that among the U.S.-born, those numbers are higher. Almost a quarter say that they're unaffiliated. So these are just some of the results revealed from our large survey that we did in 2013, looking at the religious affiliation and behaviors of Latinos. What about by country of origin or by where people are from? You can see Mexicans are the most Catholic. You can see Salvadorans are the least Catholic and the most Protestant. And you can see in terms of unaffiliated, Puerto Ricans and Cubans have the highest unaffiliated shares. So there are some differences also across the different origin groups of Hispanics in terms of their religious affiliations. Okay. What do Latinos do when it comes to various religious activities? And I apologize again for this not looking too sharp. This is a chart which shows you various views on social issues, on political issues, but also just attending services daily. So for example, among unaffiliated Hispanics, 6% tell us that they attend religious services weekly. That's interesting. Among Catholic Hispanics, that share is 40%. Among evangelical Protestants, it is 71%. What about praying daily? Among unaffiliated, 29%. Among Catholic Hispanics, 61%. And among evangelical Protestants, 84%. So you can see that there are some patterns here in terms of opinions. What about, take a literal view of the Bible. 21% of unaffiliated Hispanics say that, compared with 45% of Catholic Hispanics and 63% of evangelical Protestant Hispanics. So some pretty striking differences across these different religious affiliation groups. What about the views on abortion? Saying abortion should be illegal in most or all cases. Among the unaffiliated, 1/3 say that. Among Catholic Hispanics, 54% say that. And among evangelical Protestant Hispanics, 70%, 70, say that abortion should be illegal in all or most cases. Now, what about identifying as a Republican? You can see very, very small shares of all these groups identify as Republican, sort of indicating some of the big changes on party affiliation we've seen among Latinos towards the Democratic Party in recent years. One of the other big findings of our report was to take a look at what share of Hispanics have changed their religious affiliation? Have they moved from being what they were when they were growing up to something else? And you can see here that for all Hispanics, it looks like, particularly among Catholics, you can see that among Hispanics, there was a 22 percentage point drop in the share who identified as Catholic today compared with what they were when they were growing up. So when they were growing up, among our sample, 77% of Hispanics said they were Catholic, but today it's only 55%. So many switched or left Catholicism to go someplace else. What about people who were raised Protestant? You can see that there was a change going from 14 to a plus 8 percentage points to 22%. So Protestants are gaining among Hispanics. Same thing among the unaffiliated, some gains. So the Catholic shares are dropping as people leave Catholicism, even though they were raised Catholic, they leave it, and they're moving to either an unaffiliated status or to a Protestant status. You can also see sort of here where the net gains and losses have been overall for the Hispanic community. you can see that Catholics, again, the Catholic Church is losing adherence. What about among U.S.-born Hispanics? You can see here what some of the changes are for U.S.-born Hispanics. Big net loss in terms of Catholic share, but gains in terms of unaffiliated. A 17 percentage point gain in the share of U.S.-born Hispanics who are unaffiliated today compared to what they were when they were growing up. Oh, this doesn't look good at all. My apologies. What are some of the reasons why people left? Well, the biggest reason that people give for leaving their childhood religion is they just drifted away. So that's the biggest reason that Latinos give to us as to why they've either left being a Catholic to become a Protestant, or left being Catholic to become unaffiliated, or left Protestant to become unaffiliated. That is the top reason overall. They left because they just started to drift away. I'm going to switch gears here because I want to talk about some other things. And I think that if you're interested in some of the religious findings that we have from our survey, I would be more than happy to send you a link to the report. It's a really, really great report, but it's also a very long report. But I want to talk to you about some other things that are going on within the community, particularly around identity. We have been asking this question regularly of Latinos for some time. What term do you use most often to describe yourself? Do you call yourself Mexican, for example, in my case? Do you call yourself Hispanic or Latino? Or do you call yourself an American? And I think one of the really interesting things here is how many Hispanics say that most often they call themselves by their country of origin or their family's origin term. Perhaps it's no surprise, but that's at 54% among all Latinos. How about when you take a look at it by immigrant status? So immigrant Latinos, the foreign-born, 66% refer to themselves most often by their country of origin term. That's no surprise. That's probably what you would expect. But look at the third and higher generation. These are people who were born in the U.S. with U.S.-born parents. Yes, 59% say that they call themselves American most often. However, you'll notice as well that 20%, one in five, still call themselves most often by their family's country of origin term. That suggests to me that there still remains, even into the third generation, strong linkages to the backgrounds of people's families. People are still are proud to say that they are of Mexican or Chicano heritage, even if they don't speak Spanish. And I think that that's a really, really interesting and unique thing about the Latino community today in a post-civil rights era. We've also asked about other things, and I'm sure all of you have been asked this question. So which is it that you use, Hispanic or Latino? What do you prefer? Well, we've been asking that of Hispanics, and you can see that for Hispanics overall, 50% say they have no preference for either term. But if they did, Hispanic is preferred over Latino. You'll notice that in my talk, I've been using the two interchangeably. And that's on purpose, because trying not to take sides, you know, nonpartisan, non-advocacy, but trying to be fair. But it really, I think, speaks to the Latino community overall. These pan-ethnic terms that we use to describe the community, many Latinos actually are ambivalent about these terms. And when I do focus groups, I'm always struck by how many Latinos say, do I really have to pick one? Really? They just have no, many don't have any allegiance to either one of these terms. What about thinking of yourself as a typical American or not? Interestingly enough, Latinos are split. Half say, yeah, I'm a typical American. The other half say, no, I'm very different from the typical American. Now, we didn't define what a typical American is. We let them define it in the survey. But it's really quite interesting how it's half and half. Finally, do you think that Latinos think that they share values in common with other Hispanics in the United States? And you can see here that there's some sense of shared values, but not a lot. So many Latinos see differences more than commonalities across Hispanic groups, which I think makes sense. Somebody who is of Puerto Rican origin doesn't necessarily think they have much in common or doesn't see much in common with somebody who's, say, from Mexico or of Mexican origin. Yes, there are some commonalities, but not a lot. So it's interesting to see how Latinos view themselves and view diversity within their community. I want to close by talking about some trends, because I think one of the most important things here is to not just establish where we are now, but to talk about what's coming down the road, because there's a lot coming down the road with regards to Latino trends overall. So for example, what languages do Latinos speak? Well, overall, 38% of Latinos in our surveys are Spanish dominant. 38% are bilingual, and 24% are English dominant. But as you can see, across the generations, that changes. And when you talk about U.S.-born young people, U.S.-born Latinos, who are third or higher generation, 69% are English dominant. Only 1% are Spanish dominant, and 29% bilingual. So English is on the rise in use among Latinos, partly because so many are U.S.-born and are now coming of age. The Census Bureau actually projects that the share of Hispanics who will live in a Spanish-speaking household is going to decline. It's already been declining for a while, but it's projected to decline to about 66% in 2020, which is just a few years away. You can see that the share that speak only English at home, by contrast, is on the rise. 34% by 2020, according to Census Bureau projections, will live in a household where only English is spoken. So when we talk about the Latino community, I think one of the big trends that's also happening is not only the rise of the native-born, but also the rise of the use of English among Latinos. What about their views on specific issues? Well, when it comes to a bigger government or a smaller government, Latinos prefer a bigger government. They're in favor of a bigger government. 67% say that they want a bigger government that provides more services. What about on same-sex marriage? Latinos favor more than they oppose same-sex marriage among gays and lesbians, but this is the favor number has grown since 2006. So we're seeing a growing share of Latinos say that they favor same-sex marriage. What about on abortion? Half of Latinos say it should be illegal in all or most cases, and this number, unlike the same-sex marriage number, has not changed much in the last 10 years. So there still remains a strong share, a majority actually, of Latinos who say abortion should be illegal in all or most cases. Sorry for this map. It's a wonderful map though, isn't it? Looks great. This is a map that shows you where states are that are, let me start over again. I'm all discombobulated. This map shows you the states where among kindergartners, 20% of kindergartners are Hispanic, or 20% or more are Hispanic. And you can see here that in 2000, those states were California, Arizona, Texas, Florida, Illinois, no surprise. Today, though, you can see it includes states like Nebraska and Kansas, and it includes states like Idaho, Oregon, and Washington. Just another part of the story of the growing dispersion of the Hispanic population. It's growing in many parts of the country, and that's having an impact on a lot of different elements of American life. You could also see that today, Latino students make up a quarter of all public school students, and particularly that's true of the lower grades, but even among high school students, 23% nationwide are Hispanics. These numbers are growing. One other interesting thing is, and this is really, I think, a story that's a positive story of the last few years about Latinos and education. When you take a look at, since 2009, what's happened with college enrollments, Hispanic college enrollments have skyrocketed. Hispanics are now, there's more than 2 million young Latinos enrolled in colleges and universities nationwide. They now are the nation's largest minority group on college campuses, whether two-year or four-year. That change just happened in 2010 and 2011, respectively. That is really quite interesting. Why? Because we always would talk about Latinos as having the highest high school dropout rates. But record shares of them now are prepared to go to college, and they're enrolling in college. You ask a young Latino, do you think having a college degree is important for success in life? And they are more likely to say yes compared to other young Americans. So it's interesting how education is emphasized among Latinos, and now we're seeing growing enrollments of young Latinos in colleges and universities. It's really quite a striking trend of the last 7 years or so. Now, when we talk about education, some of the gains are really being made by young women, young Latinas. And you can see here that this is tracking the share of Hispanic women who have a college degree. Now, this is among 25 to 29-year-olds. For Hispanic women, we're almost up to 19% now. It's really quite striking. And for Hispanic men, also growing, but lagging. One of the striking things I think about Hispanic men in education versus Hispanic women is When they go to college, Hispanic men, more than half of them will go to a 2-year institution, not a 4-year. For the women, it's the other way around. It's almost the mirror. The majority of them are choosing to go to a 4-year institution as opposed to a 2-year. So there are some differences in terms of educational attainment. However, you should note that educational attainment among young Latinos lags significantly behind other groups. They're closing the gap, but the gap has a long, you have a long way to go until that gap is eliminated. One other big trend that's happened recently is poverty. Now, prior to the recession, the number of children living in poverty, the biggest number of children living in poverty were white non-Hispanics prior to the recession. With the recession, though, the number of Hispanic children living in poverty skyrocketed. Now it's nearly 6 million. That number is far larger than it is for whites and far larger than it is for blacks. So when we talk about childhood poverty, those poverty numbers, Hispanics are playing a big role in those poverty numbers. And you should be aware of that because I think that this really speaks to some of the economic challenges facing the community. That is, many young Latinos are growing up in families where they are living in poverty. And that could have implications for the future when they enter the job market and so forth. You probably have heard this story a lot. Latinos like technology, and they like mobile technology, right? This is one of the big trends among Latinos. Now, if you talk to marketers, marketers will oftentimes say something like this. Latinos have leapfrogged everybody else. They've adopted mobile technology faster than everybody else. They're in the lead on mobile technology. Some truth to that, and here's some of the truth. You can see, for example, half of Hispanic adults, live in a house where there's only a cell phone, there's no landline telephone. And they've been adopting cell phones as their main form of communication much faster than other groups, and you can see it here. It's partly because they're younger, partly because they're immigrant, but there's a number of different reasons for this. However, on other measures, like having a tablet or having a smartphone, not just a cell phone, but a smartphone, Latinos are slightly in the lead, but not really. It's very, very close. So it depends on the measure. But it is interesting that Latinos are among the nation's early technology adopters, particularly when it comes to mobile, particularly when it comes to social media. You'll see they use things like, they use Facebook just like everybody else, but they're also more likely to be Instagrammers and less likely to be Pinterest users. So there are some differences in how they what social media they use. Nonetheless, technology is an important part of the Latino experience in the United States, and I think it's important to be aware of some of these trends. What about on home ownership? Latinos continue to lag in home ownership. The recession really hurt them in this way, but they are starting to make some recovery. But still, they lag their white and Asian counterparts significantly in terms of the share who own a home. Finally, I want to close by talking about interracial and interethnic marriage. When we take a look at the United States, it's really quite interesting, the patterns that we see overall. In the United States today, 8.4% of all married folks have married somebody who is of a different race or ethnicity. Among the newly married, it's at 15%. So 1 in 7 Americans who get married today marry somebody who's of a different race or ethnicity. Interesting. But what are the numbers for Latinos? Well, for Latinos, 1/4 of all Latino newlyweds, 26% actually, 26% marries somebody who is not Hispanic. Now, why do we care about this? Why does this matter? Why is this so important? Well, I think it's interesting because, one, we live in a country where where interracial, interethnic marriage, which was really not approved of back in the 50s and 60s, for example, now it's really come all the way around where, frankly, as public opinion pollsters, we don't even ask the question much anymore, is it okay for people of different races to marry each other? Because, frankly, most Americans say, yeah, it's fine. It's also interesting that when you talk to young people oftentimes say, why do you care about the race and ethnicity of people? Who cares what you are? They're just two people getting married. That's also, I think, something very, very interesting as well. But for Latinos, will this have an implication, perhaps, for how they see their identity into the future? So when we talk about all of our projections into 2060, and we talk about how many Latinos live in the country today, you know how we get that number? We get that number by asking people, are you yourself of Hispanic or Latino origin? If they say yes, we count them as Hispanic. If they say no, we don't count them as Hispanic. So What's interesting about this is it's a self-report. There are many people, though, about 2.5 million Americans, actually, who say that they have roots in Latin America. They'll say, yeah, my grandmother is Mexican. But then they'll go on to say, I am not Hispanic or Latino. I'm not one of those. I'm an American. I'm not a Hispanic or Latino. What's interesting, I think, is I'm not sure how these patterns might influence the way Latinos see their identity in 20 years, 40 years, 60 years. It remains to be seen where Latinos will see themselves, where Hispanics will see themselves at that time. And if you think back 40 years ago, we weren't using the term Latino to describe this group. We were using the term Hispanic. It was newly minted at that time. And even prior to that, there was the census would actually classify people of Spanish origin as Mexican. At least in the 1930 census, that was what was happening in the 1930 census. So as you can see, these terms evolve over time. And somebody had asked a question earlier about race and ethnicity and so forth. It is interesting how Latinos, in our surveys as well, don't see themselves fitting into the racial classifications of the country. In fact, they'll oftentimes want to write in the answer of what they are, and guess what they typically write in? They'll say, my race is Mexican, my race is Dominican, my race is, it's one of the origin groups, typically, is what people will cite if they're going to write something in. All that means is that identity is something that's fluid. So today we're talking about Hispanic Latinos, but I wonder what we'll be talking about in 20, 30, 40 years. And I sure hope I just haven't proved the Pew Research Center's Hispanic Trends Project into non-existence. But that's for another day. We'll have to have that conversation over a cup of coffee. Thank you very much.